Greetings and welcome to Word Magazine. This is Jeff Riddle. I'm the pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. And this edition of Word Magazine, we're going to be debunking the scholarly anecdote or the scholarly legend that codices Sinaiticus and Vaticanus, the twin darlings of modern textual criticism since the 19th century, were among the so-called deluxe copies that had been ordered to be made by the Roman Emperor Constantine in the early 4th century, as recorded by Eusebius of Caesarea. And as we'll see, this scholarly anecdote or a legend sort of circulates among some popularizers of textual criticism. And this scholarly anecdote circulates in order to increase the esteem and the prestige of codices Sinaiticus and Vaticanus. So in the process of debunking this anecdote, we're going to look at three things in particular. First of all, we're going to see how the legend formed, how it was articulated, and we're going to see one recent example of someone promoting this anecdote, actually in a popular film about textual criticism. And then secondly, I'm going to provide for you three reasons that this anecdote or this legend is not true. And then thirdly, I'm going to note how this legend has actually long been discounted even by mainstream scholars of repute. And once we've covered those three topics, we'll offer a brief conclusion. So let's start off with this anecdote. And some of you might be wondering, what in the world are you talking about, Jeff? Well, every once in a while, you'll hear someone say, Codex Sinaiticus and Codex Vaticanus were copies that were ordered to be made by the Roman Emperor Constantine. He was the so-called first Christian emperor, and Christianity persecution ended when he came into office. He issued the Edict of Milan, and there's a letter that he wrote to father of church history, Eusebius of Caesarea, in which he ordered the making of 50 deluxe copies. And the argument is made that Sinaiticus and Vaticanus were among those 50 copies. And again, this is to give them some prestige. So let's just start with, how did the whole story about Constantine ordering 50 copies come about? Because there is some historical credibility to that. But what we're challenging is that Sinaiticus and Vaticanus were among those copies that were made. So the evidence that we're going to start with comes from another writing from Eusebius of Caesarea, or Eusebius Pamphilus, as he's sometimes known. And most people are familiar with his ecclesiastical history, his church history. But he wrote other things. And one of the other things that he wrote was a treatise on the life of the blessed Emperor Constantine. And it's in this work. This work consists of four books. In book four, where there are two chapters where Eusebius talks about how the emperor ordered copies of the scriptures to be made. And so I'm going to read book four, chapter 36, from the life of the blessed Emperor Constantine by Eusebius. And he starts off with, in this chapter 36 of book four, reproducing Constantine's letter to Eusebius on the preparation of copies of the scriptures. And so I'm going to read this. Victor Constantinus Maximus Augustus to Eusebius. It happens through the favoring providence of God our Savior that great numbers have united themselves to the Most Holy Church in the city which is called by my name. That means Constantinople. It seems, therefore, highly requisite, since that city is rapidly advancing in prosperity in all other respects, that the number of the churches should also be increased. Do you, therefore, receive with all readiness my determination on this behalf. I have thought it expedient to instruct your prudence to order 50 copies of the sacred scriptures, the provision and use of which you know to be most needful for the instruction of the church, to be written on prepared parchment in a legible manner and in a commodious and portable form by transcribers thoroughly practiced in their art. The procurator of the diocese has also received instructions by letter from our clemency to be careful to furnish all things necessary for the preparation of such copies, and it will be for you to take special care that they be completed with as little delay as possible. You have authority also, in virtue of this letter, to use two of the public carriages for their conveyance, by which arrangement the copies, when fairly written, will most easily be forwarded for my personal inspection. And one of the deacons of your church may be entrusted with this service, who, on his arrival here, shall experience my liberality. God preserve you, beloved brother. And so here's this letter purporting to have come from Constantine to Eusebius, ordering that he would see to the making of 50 copies of the scriptures, especially for the churches that are in the city that was called by his name in Constantinople. And so he's providing the purse for this, the payment for it, and he said it's to be done by professional scribes. Then in book four, the very next chapter, chapter 37, there's another note about this. And this is titled, How the Copies Were Provided. And so Eusebius writes, such were the emperor's commands, which were followed by the immediate execution of the work itself, which we sent him in magnificent and elaborate volumes of a threefold and fourfold form. This fact is attested by another letter which the emperor wrote in acknowledgement, in which, having heard that the city Constantia in our country, the inhabitants of which had been more than commonly devoted to superstition, had been impelled by a sense of religion to abandon their past idolatry, he testified his joy and approval of their conduct. And so he's simply saying that he followed through and he did what the emperor had ordered him to do. The copies were made in a threefold and fourfold form. Does that mean in three columns, in four columns? We're not exactly sure. But anyways, that's what he said. So there is a historical nugget that the Emperor Constantine did order the making of 50 copies for the expanding churches, churches being rebuilt after the persecution, the Diocletian persecution that took place from 303 to 313, and the destruction of the copies of the scriptures. And so there were these 50 copies that Constantine ordered to be made by professional scribes. But there's no mention of it, what these manuscripts were. Eusebius says this was done, but the leap is that some people have suggested that among those 50 copies were Codices Sinaiticus and Vaticanus. And again, you'll often hear this sort of presented on a popular level by apologists, often just suggesting it as a possibility. And I ran across a recent example of this. There was a film that came out a couple of years ago, and the film is called Fragments of Truth, and it's about textual criticism. It's very well done as far as the film quality goes. Documentary put together by the Faith Life organization, and Craig Evans, who teaches at what used to be Houston Baptist University, now called Houston Christian University, is the sort of host of this, and he interviews different mainstream academic scholars. And it's sort of representing the view of evangelicals who embrace modern textual criticism, but who still want to believe in the integrity of the Bible, even though they think it has to be reconstructed and we're not quite sure exactly 100% what it is. But anyways, I was listening to this video, which it came out, the film came out a couple years ago, I think, and just recently they put it on YouTube for free consumption. And so I was listening to it, and lo and behold, I heard this anecdote being propagated. And so let me go ahead and pull up that video if I can. Here it is on YouTube, and this is the Fragments of Truth documentary film featuring Dr. Craig Evans. And we're just going to listen to just a short piece of this. And they're in a segment where they're talking about Codex Vaticanus, which is found in the Vatican Library in Rome. And listen as this anecdote is sort of put forward as a plausible explanation for the origins of Codex Sinaiticus and Vaticanus, and more specifically in this little clip for Vaticanus. So here we go. Let's listen to this briefly.
The Vatican Library houses one of the most important Christian codices in the world, Codex Vaticanus. Its origins are unknown, but many scholars believe it was one of 50 copies of the Bible that the Emperor Constantine commissioned after declaring Christianity the official religion of the Roman Empire.
Let me pause here for a moment. So its origins are unknown, but many people believe that it was one of the 50 copies that was sanctioned by the Emperor Constantine. And actually, there's another sort of error that is put forward here. Now, to their credit, they said the origins are unknown, but they say many scholars believe. They make it sound like it's a very plausible, who are these scholars? Do they know their stuff? And obviously they mention it in this documentary. It's a guy narrating this who has a British accent, so it must be true. You get a British accent, your IQ goes up by 10 points. And so it's kind of authoritatively put forward. But anyway, there's sort of another historical error here. And then it says that under the Emperor Constantine that Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire. That's actually not true. When Constantine came to the throne and issued the Edict of Milan, he didn't make Christianity the official religion. What he did was he ordered tolerance for all religions. So Christianity was no longer persecuted. But it wasn't made the exclusive religion of the empire. Only about 10% of the Roman Empire, historians estimate, was Christianized at that point. But he basically issued in this edict religious tolerance for pagans, for Christians, for Jews, for other sects. It's only decades after the Emperor Constantine when the Emperor Theodosius I is ruling that he issues in the year 380 a declaration making Christianity the official religion of the Roman Empire and expressing intolerance towards other religions. So anyways, it's just sort of another little factual mistake or error or misstatement that's put forward in this documentary. Let's listen to just a little bit more of what they say about Vaticanus, but I think we've already made the point. We've shown this little video as an example of promoting this anecdote that Codex Vaticanus, at least, was one of the 50 deluxe copies that was ordered by the Roman Emperor Constantine. Let's listen to just a little bit more.
Codex Vaticanus has been in the Vatican Library since at least the 15th century. It seems to appear in an inventory of the library, which was made in 1475. We don't know how it came to be here. That's the first news that we have of it. Whoever.
I will stop right there. So first time Vaticanus shows up on the historical radar is 1475. It appears on an index of works that are in the Vatican Library. No one really knows where it came from, but we've been told in this documentary, at least, that many scholars, supposedly reputable scholars, believe it was one of the 50 deluxe copies ordered by Constantine. Although no mention is made here of Sinaiticus, the same claim is often made about Sinaiticus. And again, my sense is that this was part of the 19th century push to valorize Codices Sinaiticus and Vaticanus, because they shaped the modern critical text. And so if they were sort of official copies that were approved, had the stamp of approval of the Roman emperor, then this would sort of, again, validate their readings as sort of official readings of early Christianity. And so anyway, that's sort of the idea that I think is put forward. Now, having shown or demonstrated this anecdote, where it arises from, and how I think it's popularly represented or misrepresented, I want to look at three reasons why I think we can conclude that this anecdote is not true. Three reasons. First reason is there is no explicit evidence that either Sinaiticus or Vaticanus were among these so-called deluxe copies that are mentioned by Eusebius. There's no, certainly no indication of this in the manuscripts themselves. There's no note where it says these were created on the order of the Emperor Constantine. So there's no explicit evidence for this. There's no citation that associates these particular manuscripts with those copies. Secondly, according to Eusebius, the copies ordered by Constantine were for the church in and around Constantinople. That's what it said in the letter that he cited from the emperor. And Sinaiticus and Vaticanus are both generally associated with Egypt, not with Constantinople. To use the now outdated text type language, copies made in Constantinople would most likely have reflected the so-called Byzantine text, not the so-called Alexandrian text that was used to be associated when people used text type languages and schemes with Egypt. So there's a geographical challenge to thinking that Vaticanus or Sinaiticus were part of these 50 copies made for the churches in and around Constantinople. And then thirdly, and this third argument against the anecdote being true hinges on the idea that both Sinaiticus and Vaticanus were among these copies. And we can have an argument against this because there are numerous differences between Sinaiticus and Vaticanus, which would make it unlikely that they had been among those works that were made to order by professional scribes. You would think they would have used the same exemplar, and so they would have been, either identical or nearly identical, aside from any accidental errors that might have taken place in the transcription. But Sinaiticus and Vaticanus are very different from one another. Dean John Bergen, in his book, The Revision Revised of 1881, noted thousands of differences just between Sinaiticus and Vaticanus in the Gospels alone, much less the rest of the books that they contain. And if you look at Sinaiticus and Vaticanus, there is even a significant difference in the ordering of the books in the New Testament canon. Sinaiticus places the book of Acts, for example, after the Pauline epistles and before the general epistles, while Vaticanus places the book of Acts in the position we're more familiar with, after the Gospels and before the Pauline epistles. So it's unlikely that Sinaiticus and Vaticanus would both have been part of these 50 deluxe works because there's so many disagreements, significant disagreements between them, both in the text and in the canonical ordering. So we've introduced the anecdote. I've given you three reasons why I think it's incorrect. And then thirdly, I want to note that that many mainstream scholars have long debunked this idea, even though, again, it's showing up in this Faith Life documentary with Craig Evans. But there's a long history of scholars who have questioned this so-called anecdote. In fact, we can say to his credit, if we go back to Bruce Metzger's classic textbook, The Text of the New Testament, famously subtitled Its Transmission, Corruption, and Restoration. And I happen to have a copy of each one of the editions of this book. This is the first edition. This is from when this thing first came hot off the press in 1964 from Oxford University Press. And on page 7, there's a little rehearsal of this Eusebius account of the 50 deluxe copies. And if you look at the other editions that came out of Metzger's book all the way up to the most recent edition of it, which was co-edited with Bart Ehrman, there are no changes made to the account as it appeared in the first edition, in the 1964 edition. So this is what Metzger says about these 50 copies. This is page 7. He says, the suggestion has been made by several scholars that the two oldest parchment manuscripts of the Bible, which are in existence today, namely Codex Vaticanus and Codex Sinaiticus, may have been among those ordered by Constantine. It has been pointed out that Eusebius's curious expression, volumes of threefold and fourfold forms, agrees with the circumstances that these two codices have respectively three columns and four columns on each page. There are, he continues, however, one or two indications which point to Egypt as the place of origin of Codex Vaticanus, and the type of text found in both codices is unlike that used by Eusebius. The most that can be said with certainty, therefore, is that codices Vaticanus and Sinaiticus are doubtless like those that Constantine ordered Eusebius to have copied. So here we have sort of the anecdote mentioned, and Metzger says some scholars have suggested this, but he gives some of the same reasons that I just gave. It seems to be associated with Egypt. It doesn't seem to have the text type that Eusebius used. But anyways, there in a footnote, he does include several articles that discuss this issue of the deluxe copies. He cites an article that was written by Kirsip Lake titled The Sinaitic and Vatican Manuscripts and the Copies Sent by Eusebius to Constantinople. That's from Harvard Theological Review, volume 11 in 1918, pages 32 to 35. And he mentions a couple of other articles, but I haven't looked at that one by Kirsip Lake, but that would be an interesting one. It looks like just a kind of a short note. And that may be the origin, perhaps, of this anecdote. The second example that I'll give is one that's more recent. And this is from the book by David C. Parker, D.C. Parker. And it's titled Codex Sinaiticus, The Story of the World's Oldest Bible. And this is a handsome volume that was published by the British Library along with Hendrickson. It's about Codex Sinaiticus. But there's an interesting part on pages 19 through 22 where D.C. Parker also discusses this anecdote about, in particular, because this book is about Sinaiticus, about whether Sinaiticus would have been one of these deluxe copies that Eusebius refers to. So he starts off on page 19, and this is what he says. He says, it is clear how significant Constantine's policies were for the history of Christianity, and consequently for the development of the book. They made the conditions in which Codex Sinaiticus was created. It is interesting then to find that it has been claimed that the codex may have been written at the emperor's express command. The reason for this is a passage in Eusebius's Life of Constantine, where he reproduces a letter which he had received on the topic of copying the scriptures. And then he quotes exactly that same letter that I read earlier, that is found in Eusebius's Life of the Blessed Emperor Constantine, book 4. And then he continues, I won't reread the same letter. He says, at first sight, this appears clear, And certain similarities with Codex Sinaiticus and Codex Vaticanus may occur to one. For example, that these deluxe complete Bibles are so impressive that they might be the product of imperial patronage, and that Eusebius's reference to producing them in threes and fours might refer to the layouts of the manuscripts which he had made, namely the three columns to a page of Codex Vaticanus and four of Codex Sinaiticus. The argument that two of the 50 survived carries with it two assumptions about an imperial production, that the quality will have been superior and that their preservation is due in part to the added prestige of such a book. But when we begin to look at this story in more detail, difficulties with the letter and with identifying any extant manuscript as one of the 50 begin to emerge. In fact, the more we study it, the less certain we can be about what was intended. In the first place, it is often said that Constantine ordered 50 Bibles for 50 churches in Constantinople. The wording does not necessarily mean that the copies were complete Bibles. I have translated the phrase as divine scriptures. The assumption that each copy contained the entire Greek Bible may owe more to modern familiarity with printed Bibles, which normally contain both testaments, each in its entirety. But it has already been argued that complete copies such as Codex Sinaiticus were a rarity in the ancient world. So D.C. Parker would add another argument, and he says it never is clearly stated in the letter that purports to be from Constantine in Eusebius' writings that he had actually ordered 50 whole copies of the Bible. Simply, he could have been actually just ordering some selections, some books from the so-called sacred writings. Parker continues, one suspicion that the story is not straightforward may grow when one discovers that the successful expansion of the church in Constantinople is unlikely to have been such that 50 new churches were built. It has been suggested that in the entire empire, there were only 23 church buildings, which may, with reasonable confidence, be attributed to Constantine as patron or founder, together with several others, which may be considered live possibilities. Of these five were built in the new capital, Hagia Irene, Hagia Sophia, St. Acacius in Heptaskalon, the Archangel Michael at Annapolis, all started after the year 326, and the Church of the Holy Apostles and Mausoleum of Constantine after 330. Another five churches were attributed to the Constantinian dynasty, at the very least have a fourth century date. Of these, it has been suggested that one, St. Mochius, was also built by Constantine. Even if the numbers are approximate, they fall far short of the 50 buildings, each requiring a complete Bible necessary for the standard interpretation of the passage. Nor should we accept uncritically the claim that imperial patronage indicated superior workmanship. The pagan historian Zosimus, whose account of Constantine provides a good antidote to Eusebius's hagiography, records that he expended the public treasure in unnecessary and unprofitable buildings and built some which soon after were taken down again because they were built too quickly and did not stand up. Contrast this with Eusebius's account of the emperor's church building program in his capital. So here's another argument. He's saying, although some have interpreted the letter to be 50 Bibles for 50 churches, he's suggesting that Constantine wasn't really responsible for building that many churches. Again, I think that he's probably too harsh here in his assessment. He says plainly in the letter, if Eusebius has rightly produced the letter, that he wanted these copies of the scriptures, I think Bibles, copies of the Bible for churches in Constantinople and the vicinity. Maybe there's more than one Bible was given to the buildings if there were less than 50. This is Parker. He continues, what can be learned about the manuscripts commissioned from Eusebius? Clearly, the fact of the commissioning is in itself significant, along with the instruction that the materials and the transportation of the finished product were to be supplied from public funds. The instructions about the books suggest that the interest is in useful rather than impressive books. They are to have leather bindings for durability and to be easily legible and to be portable. The requirement that they should be made by skilled scribes and written well does not necessarily indicate that they should be beautiful, as some translate the penultimate sentence of the letter. That is to say, calligraphy refers to good professional rather than second-class work, in which beauty is secondary to pragmatic awareness that such products may have represented better value for money. Another difficulty with interpreting the passage is that there seems to be something missing from the text of Eusebius after the sentence referring to threes and fours, or so editors have suspected. In fact, the translation threes and fours is doubtful. I suppose that if one took together the possibility that each of the 50 manuscripts contained a part of the scriptures and took an approximation of 10 churches requiring copies, one could easily suppose that each church could require 5 manuscripts. For example, a Pentateuch, a Psalter, the prophets, the gospels, and Paul's letters. This is not an impossible way of treating Eusebius' account as accurate, but any connection with Codex Sinaiticus is thereby denied. So he says if what he's talking about were 50 portions of the scriptures and maybe 5 each were given to 10 different churches, this would exclude the idea that Sinaiticus or Vaticanus, which were larger volumes that included all the Old Testament and perhaps originally all the New Testament, that this would not have been the type of work that was being described here. He continues, another argument against identifying Codex Sinaiticus as one of the 50 is that it is generally considered to have been written in the period 350 to 360, 1 or 2 decades after Constantine's death in 337. In any case, Constantine was not the only emperor to commission Bibles. In about the year 341, the Patriarch Athanasius of Alexandria provided the Emperor Constans with a number of copies. He wrote, I sent to him bound volumes of the Holy Scriptures, which he had ordered me to prepare for him. And this is a passage that is not so well known, he says in a footnote, as letter to Eusebius, perhaps because of the first suggested by J.A. Fabricius, that Athanasius gave the emperor a copy of a synopsis of sacred scriptures, a summary of the biblical books. But this work is now known not to have been written by Athanasius. He concludes this discussion, D.C. Parker does, by saying at the time Athanasius was in exile in Rome from where Constance was ruling, assuming very reasonably that these were Greek copies, Codex Sinaiticus is as plausibly one of these copies as one of the set made for Constantine. But how many other manuscripts were written for how many other imperial patrons under circumstances about which we now know nothing? And how many for wealthy patrons who were not emperors? The answer has to be that to try to tidy up history so neatly with Codex Sinaiticus, the result of an independently attested event, is overconfident by far. The commissions by Constantine and by Constans are examples of one way in which a manuscript such as Codex Sinaiticus might have been made, but we can say no more than that. So he's saying, yeah, there may have been patrons, there may have been emperors or other wealthy people who commissioned the making of Bibles, the copying of books like Sinaiticus and Vaticanus, but to suggest that these are exactly the ones mentioned by Eusebius, the 50 copies ordered by the Emperor Constantine, as Parker puts it, that is to be overconfident by far. And I think one of the things that you know, we can pull away from this whole discussion is we don't know the provenance. We don't know anything about the origins of Sinaiticus and Vaticanus. And this is another reason not to hitch our wagon to just these two manuscripts in particular as our basic guidelines for determining the text. as happened, I think, in the 19th century. So in the end, just to add a conclusion to the discussion thus far, I think that we can see that clearly the scholarly legend, as it was articulated in the Fragments of Truth video, that this scholarly legend is in no way a certainty of history. And I think it's very likely that this scholarly legend was fabricated probably in the 19th century. And I think it was, it did develop and continues to be promoted in what I feel like is a misguided attempt to add to the prestige and respectability of St. Ignatius and Vaticanus. Well, I think we have succeeded with the help of others, especially D.C. Parker, with debunking this idea. So when you hear someone confidently say, well, St. Ignatius and Vaticanus, those were two of the deluxe copies that Constantine ordered, I hope that you'll remember this little discussion and remember that the person who is promoting that is actually promoting an idea that is completely unproven. Well, this is going to bring this edition of Word Magazine to a close. I hope that this has been helpful and edifying for those who are listening, and I'll look forward to speaking to you in the next edition of Word Magazine. Till then, take care and God bless.